Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 61. What's going on, folks? Jeff Lowe, Trill Bollins, Ken Jack. And this is our apology week. Is that what we're calling this? Because
yeah, we're really sorry. We're really sorry. We could not get that episode on Sunday to work. We tried. And it wasn't it wasn't that we did not want to do it. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's vacation. We wanted to power through it, but we tried for an hour to get it set up. So I'm glad we're up and running. But Jeff, you're cursed by the new laptop curse, I guess, to be redundant. And you're using your Fortnite headset and mic to do this podcast.
I am. Yeah. So if it sounds shitty, just bear with this for a week or half a week. But almost this episode had issues to start with, too. We're just a little cursed right now. Not a great start of July for us.
Did you get the Xbox version of the headphones?
No, it's just green.
Oh, but that's the Xbox
Turtle version. Beaches. Turtle Beaches, yeah. Are just green by nature, dude.
Oh, really?
Do you game much, bro?
I thought I had a Turtle Beach that was the PlayStation Blue. I don't know. Maybe I need to game a little more.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Respect
that's in my cards. Yeah, having a kid, no better time to game than right around having a new baby. That's what they always say.
Yeah. So a couple big things for this week. So we're going to do three episodes this week. You're listening to the first episode. It's the Sunday episode. We're going to have another episode on Tuesday morning, and then we'll have our normal Thursday episode. So that's how it's going to go. We're going to talk with Sicario this episode and do some listener questions. The Tuesday morning episode will be Tag and Uncle Drew, we called out for what movies you would want to be seen made from commercials, and we're going to try to come up with plots and ideas for these movies. And then Thursday will be Ant-Man and the Wasp, but we don't know what our segment's going to be yet for that. But that's the three you're going to get. Some fun movies, some bad ones in here. Let's kick it off with.
I was thinking we could redo the skit, the Anthony Dice, the Dice Man, and the
Dice Man and the Fasb.
The Fasb.
Bring it back.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I mean, how was the process work on that? Like, you thought of it in like 2 seconds, 15 minutes. Me and Devlin just recorded it, and I was like, that's the dumbest.
It's like the funniest thing about it is that there are some things that actually I don't even want to say some things that we've like marinated on for a long time. Typically, our skits come together very quickly. Like, the ideas are not very well. Like, that one was a joke that Trill had like a couple weeks ago. It was Dice Man and the Wasp. And then we were thinking about a skit idea because we were like, oh, crap, we don't have anything. And this happened within the span of maybe 45 minutes. Honest to God, like, from the second I was actually walking home, I was in Times Square when Ken Jack mentioned in the group, like, oh, we don't have a skit. I said, oh, crap. And he said, Dice Man and the Wasp. And then Trill, or one of you chimed in out of nowhere saying, what about Dice Man and the Fast? Like Michael Fassbender, for no reason whatsoever. Like, I don't even know what the correlation
didn't make
is.
Makes sense at all.
The joke, it's one of those jokes that works better in text with the Fasp. Didn't translate as well. Hey, I got a follow-up for you guys. Remember when we did the Court of Trill, Death of Stalin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was on an airplane, and I watched Death of Stalin, and I loved it. And I think I would give it around an 85. Super funny Ooh. Movie. So if you haven't seen it already, it should be on all streaming platforms. Should be easier to watch now. True. You don't think so?
Oh, dude. So like rent for money. Yeah.
Yeah. No, no. I mean, okay. Let me revise that. Should be on like Apple or like on demand type.
To buy or rent. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's not on Netflix. Hilarious movie. First off, like I love the way everybody had a different accent. Like they didn't even try to all have like Russian accents. That really added to the humor. And then the guy who, the larger guy, what was his name? Beria in the movie.
Yeah. Beria.
Beria. That actor is so funny and it makes me want to go see more of his stuff. So I recommend it. That's the follow-up for Court of Trill. I decided I would see it and I've seen it and I've rated it. Go see that one.
Yeah. So, and damn all the haters who didn't think you'd actually go see it when, you know, we made our pitches.
Also, I have to say, when you watch these movies on airplanes, it's awesome. Airplanes are now giving you essentially free movies when you used to have to swipe your card. Maybe some airlines still do that. They make you watch a commercial for the airline before the movie starts, like the one you're already flying on. So
that's like when somebody has like a really viral tweet, like their most viral tweet, and pins it to their top of their page. And it's like, remember that thing that brought you here? Look at it again, motherfucker.
Yeah, this is going into Jerry Seinfeld airplane humor travel territory. So I want to stay away from that. I'd be like, am I the only one who doesn't like air travel here? I got to be.
So I'm glad you saw it. It's a good pick. Ken, Jack, and I were going to be doing our top 10 movies so far from 2018 this week in a little blog. And actually yours as well, the listeners, because we're going to recount the ones that you have as your top 10. And I think that'll probably be in both of our top 10s, right?
Yeah, it's in my top 10. I watched Love, Simon as well, and I think that's probably going to be in my top 10 as well.
My top 10 as well.
I really liked Love, Simon. It was a very, very good movie.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff. There's another one we're going to get to either in this episode or the next one that I'm going to mention quick because some listeners have wanted us to talk about. Sorry to bother you, but we'll bring that up later. We got some news to get to. Lots of news to catch up on. Missing an episode, that's big stuff. There's a lot of news. And there was a lot of big news, actually, last week. Started out, Idris Elba, he's going to be the villain in Hobbs and Shaw, the Fast and the Furious spinoff movie, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Jason Statham. This is a very controversial Fast and the Furious movie because this is the movie that sparked all that stuff with Tyrese Gibson and Vin Diesel and The Rock and lots of arguing. But, I mean, they land a pretty dynamite villain. They did in the last one, too, because the last one was Charlize Theron. I mean, that's a pretty massive get for a villain. And now Idris Elba, this is going to be a schlocky movie. But if you had someone like Idris Elba, now I'm like kind of excited for it, even though I was on the fence a little bit to begin with.
I think I'm more excited for this Hobbs and Shaw movie than I am about the ninth installment of the Fast and Furious franchise. Mm,
that's fair. Like, yeah, I can see eye to eye with that.
So Furious 7 I thought was great, but the Fate of the Furious I didn't like as much. So I think this spinoff might be a good retooling, recalibration period for the mainline franchise. But it's got all the actors. I love Idris Elba. We love Idris Elba. And him as a villain with The Rock and Jason Statham. Come on. That's just great movie watching. It's great box office dynamite, as they say in the business.
So Idris Elba, I can only think of being a villain besides Ghost Rider, if you want to count that, but not really. I can only think of him being a villain when he was in Star Trek Beyond, and he stunk as a villain in that. Great yes. actor. He stunk as a villain in that movie. So if it's anything like that, that's bad. But I'm struggling to see how he can be his like suave, really classy self and also be in like a Fast and a Furious movie, because those things are like mutually exclusive. His like style and like subtlety and like just a big CGI fuckfest Fast and Furious movie with The Rock.
Oh, no, I think you look back to Skyfall and our boy. Gosh, I'm forgetting names.
Christoph Waltz. Yeah. No, wait, no.
That's Skyfall. Bardem.
Yeah, he kind of had that like suave thing going, but with like a little bit of a weirdo touch to it. You know what I'm saying?
Are you comparing the vibe though of stuff the James Bond movies?
No, but I'm saying he can be suave and sophisticated and. You know, handsome and also be a villain. You know, what if he's like, I don't know. I'm trying to say, I see it.
I don't think he'd be a bad villain in general. I think he might be a bad fit for this type of villain, which needs to be like every other Fast and the Furious movie, like an over the top weirdo. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like, who was the last villain? Like, Charlize Theron was the last.
Yeah, Charlize.
Sure, it's been a long weekend. Okay, but yeah, she was the villain in the last one, and I didn't think she was very good too. It's just not a natural fit.
Yeah, it was a little weird because I felt like her character was written to be campy, and I'll say schlocky again, and I just. It's funny, like, having a great actress try and not be great, because, like, I feel like in that role, in Fast and the Furious, like, the worse of a, like, performance you put on, not in terms of worse, but, like, kind of weird, the better it is, and, like, I think it's just tough for a really good actress to do that, or an actress. I'm curious what Elba does, because I think Elba I'd put in the same class as Charlize Theron, so, I mean, and this is going to be a punch-it-up villain, too, I would imagine, because the, you know, part of the lore with The Rock and Statham is that they just beat the shit out of each other in these movies. So I assume they're going to be fighting Idris Elba, like, literally hand to hand, which will, that's an interesting element to add to that.
I'm hyped for this. I do hope Elba does something a little bit different with it. And maybe gets a little quirky with it. Cause I think it'd be good for the role. All I know is Dwayne The Rock Johnson is in full force social media posting about his Skyscraper media tour, and it's getting me super excited for Skyscraper.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Oh my God. I've been all over that. I saw him.
Have you guys seen about this Skyscraper movie?
Yeah, it's a real movie about a skyscraper. And he was saying, like, so he retweeted somebody who mentioned, like, if you have whatever fear of heights is called, like, acrophobia or something, like you'd be sweating during this movie. I don't fucking know, dude. That's why I said, I guess. And then I'm going to bring my
I don't think it's agoraphobia. I think agoraphobia is afraid of leaving the house.
All right. Moving on.
I was the one who was wrong there. So you should take this opportunity.
We need to be concise, and you are going off the rails right now. I'm reeling it in a rare change of pace. All right. So when me and Jeff go and see Skyscraper, I'm going to bring my smartwatch and measure my BPM because I'm fucking terrified. And, like, my hands sweat a ton. Like, you know the videos where Russian people put on, like, GoPros and, like, walk on the edge of buildings and shit. Like, I'll watch those and, like, I start sweating profusely. Like, and scares the shit out of me. So I'm going to see how much it scares me. Probably more than hereditary.
I agree. I don't like those videos either. That's okay. Measure a BPM for a whole movie. I do want to add one thing. I want to add one thing about this movie before we move on. Because actually, you mentioned Star Trek, Jack. We're going to talk about Star Trek next. We always try to talk about Star Trek. We always cut the segment. We'll see if it makes it. But the one interesting thing about this movie, and height never really matters in movies, as you saw with, like, the Robert De Niro wearing those, like, stilt shoes to try and look taller. Like, I mean, they can make any actor actress look taller, but Statham is 5'10", Idris Elba is 6'3", and The Rock is 6'5". So, I mean, that's a huge height difference between the three of them, or at least the two and then the one. So, I'm interested to see if they're going to... Vin Diesel's short, too.
Nick, 5?
Yeah. Well,
I'm 5'10", so don't say that, Jeff.
Well, sure, for short compared to The Rock. I mean, because, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger's really short. Yeah, so I'm curious if they're going to try to do some tricks to make Elba maybe a little smaller, because I know Statham is smaller than The Rock in Fast and the Furious, so they try to even it out. So, a little interesting angle there. We'll see. For this,
you guys are 5'11", right? 5'11", guys?
Yeah. Yeah, the three of us are all the same height, really.
I sound like I'm the shortest guy in the podcast.
Because it's true.
I might have to get some of those big shoes that our big favorite actor from Mission Impossible has been rumored to wear.
Oh, I can't wait for that movie.
Allegedly.
It's a rumor.
That's a movie I cannot wait for.
Yes.
I'm so pumped for that. Boom. All right. Moving on. Like I said, we never end up talking about this Tarantino Star Trek movie. Because for one reason or another, it's just never an interesting discussion. But I think we finally have it. I think this is interesting enough. Tarantino's Star Trek movie is apparently going to bring back the Abrams cast. So Zachary Quinto, Chris Pine, Zoe Saldana, etc. Do we like that? Do we not like that? Because some of, like, the draw for the Tarantino one is going to be a lot more like regular Star Trek. Maybe a completely different cast. Like, just totally out of that universe. There's some who really like the new Star Treks, and there's some who really don't. I personally like the first and the third. I don't care for Into Darkness as much. But, I mean, I'm okay with this. I've grown to like this cast. So, why not give it a shot, right? But where do you guys stand?
I think he's going to set back the franchise a few years. I'm just using this as, like, my segue to say that. the actual news of bringing back the cast, that's great. Like, because the cast is good. I don't care whatever you think about the movies. I think they do a fine job portraying everybody. I feel, again, RIP, shout out to Anton Yelchin, who died.
He was one of my favorite ones, too.
Yeah,
exactly. That's great. The cast.
Oh, he sucked. And we just watched, I just watched Thoroughbreds pretty recently, and he was pretty awesome in that. So shout out to him. I'm not interested at all in Tarantino doing this, because I don't want a dialogue heavy Star Wars. It's not what it's about. It's about, like, usually the whole point of Star Wars is like you have a plot where it's like learn
Star Trek.
Sorry, again, Star Wars is a long weekend of
franchise.
You got to pass on Sundays.
Yeah,
it's Sundays, and there's been a lot of alcohol in my system circulating for a while. Red Bull vodkas too, which is like the worst one for memory the next day.
Oh,
I'm a loser.
Yeah. Yeah. No thanks.
So the big part of Star Trek is that you learn like a lesson throughout. It's true. All right. You watch the franchise. You watch the next.
No, you just said you said Star Wars again. I just think I think it's funny. It's funny to me.
You know, is it funny to you as a dad watching like a young person mess up or something? You just get your rocks off to me. Like,
now you're going to guilt me.
Not my pronunciation. Yeah.
I know. I should be a mentor right now instead of dragging you down. Okay, go ahead. Exactly. You're about to make a good point.
Just that I think Star Trek is like, it's plot heavy. It's not about dialogue. And Tarantino's all about dialogue heavy movies. And I just don't see any situation where he makes a movie that's going to make Star Trek any better.
Now, isn't the Next Generation pretty dialogue? I mean, it's a TV show, so, you know, they don't have the budget. But I think I'm picking up what you're putting down. It's a movie, so it has to be a spectacle almost, right? So like the Star Trek TV shows can't really do the same thing on the silver screen as it can on TV, just because they, you know, you got to do it 2 hours. It's got to be something you want to go and get blown away with. So I get what you're saying there from a movie standpoint. I don't personally care that much about it. I don't. I like that cast. I liked the first Star Trek reboot. So, you know, that's fine. But I don't know. I don't know enough about what Tarantino is going to do with it to have an opinion. Could be good. Could be awful.
I think that's kind of where I am. I'm just indifferent. What I really want is I want Simon Pegg to do another one. And I think Justin Lin, I really liked the last one. Like, it's not a perfect movie, but it was a lot of fun. It was engaging. You liked the characters. There were good storylines, good combinations of, you know, the characters being off in different paths. I personally really enjoyed the last one. And I think Simon Pegg's done a great job. Justin Lin did a great job. So, I mean, maybe going off that, like, I hope it doesn't delay another one of those. Like, I'm curious to see how this one lands in it. Like, I don't care as much about the cinematic universe, but I hope it's not like a waste of them when they could be making a whole nother, like, really fun, upbeat one like the last one, you know? Because you don't really ever know what to expect with Tarantino. Because, I mean, again, you don't know. You just don't know with his movies. It could be a bit more of a downer compared to the last one. Or the last one, again, was a good time. So,
Walton Goggins playing Spock.
Big ass teeth.
Yeah. Just saw him in Ant-Man 2 again today. Excuse me, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Not Ant-Man 2.
He's so great.
That's the real title. He's fantastic. I love Walton Goggins.
Love him.
All right, next up. Mission Impossible 6 director. He talked about the mustache. He finally opened up about the famed mustache. Christopher McQuarrie, he opened up about it. This is what he said. He's going to talk about it in an Empire magazine podcast. I'm not going to say the podcast because I'm not going to promote a competitor. But he said the short answer was we made every effort to accommodate Justice League without negatively impacting our movie. There was nothing we could do. To me, that sounds like someone who said, fuck you, CGI it out. Like, I'm not saying he's a mean guy, but I feel like if I were him, I'd be like, get out of my face. That's your crappy movie. You guys screwed it up. You blew it. Do not mess with my movie. You know, because, you know, like every time, just because someone says that we did everything we could doesn't mean they literally did. Like, they're just using that term. Like, he's just saying that to try and seem nice. And I don't blame him one bit if that's the case.
It's like, why should we be the ones to figure out what you're doing with the mustache like that? And by the way, here's my take on it. And I think it's a really good take. That is such a glorious mustache. I would do everything in my own power as the head of this movie to preserve that mustache and make sure nothing happens to it during filming.
Yeah.
So I understand that. If it was a crappy mustache, yeah, this shitty mustache or something like that, I wouldn't care. But that mustache is on a whole nother level.
I wonder what the actual options he offered, whatever Paramount to it were, or DC were. Like, what could he possibly offer? Because he said, like, we made every attempt to accommodate them. Like, what were the other, like, what would they have offered? Like, what's the wait until we were done?
Yeah, like, just release it in 2019. Just wait two more years. Like, yeah, I am. That's a great question. I'm really curious. I guess I have to listen to this podcast. I'm curious what the other options were, because if they didn't offer to shave it off, this is literally the only other option, right?
Like, yeah.
What's this other? Maybe there's a crazy option that we can't even think of that he offered. That's even worse for Justice League than having to CGI it out.
Well, you know how you know how the Purdue engineers, who is that Purdue player? God. They're trying to get like an elbow brace for him or whatever for the tournament. And every broadcast, they're like, the Purdue engineers are working on this medical device, so something should be fixed soon. They got the Purdue engineers that were just working around the clock to come up with a good fake mustache, but they couldn't do it.
Isaac Haas, is that his name?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that wasn't a funny joke, but you know, just bear with me here.
You know, there's the joke's gonna be good when you start with you. You know, the joke's gonna be really good when you start with you. Remember that Purdue engineer? Like, you're heading in the right direction. Then.
I thought it was a serious anecdote.
I just imagine like the option being like, we have this crack team of like good costume people coming up with a fake mustache if he shaves it off. And they're like, no, dude, this mustache is so glorious. Like, how can you ask that of us? It's so central to his character's appearance in that movie, too, because it makes him look that much more menacing.
Oh, yeah. He's like, he's of a different cut than Tom Cruise's character, than Ethan Hawke, because of the stash. Stash is important. We should go to, actually, we both have facial hair. That was stupid. But if you don't have facial hair, you should go to the new Mission Impossible with a fake mustache. That should be the cosplay. Nothing else. Just regular clothes, just the mustache.
I'm in full travel mode right now.
Yeah, that's true. You really should dress up like him.
I would just try and then just talk in an English accent. And they're like, but you're like 50 pounds heavier than him and shorter and not muscular. And you smell like beef. And I'm like, no, it's me. I'm the Henry Cavill. Oh, you fucking what, mate?
He's only 6'1". So you're really actually not. I didn't realize he's only 6'1".
So, he's beefy, though. He's a beefy man, and he's hairy. He's got to have a lot of hair on his chest. I can't pull it off. I need like my the fucking chest hair wig prosthesis that we used when I did a Vladdy Divac. I need that for it.
Oh yeah,
he's got nice delts too. You know, he's got those. Yeah, he's got those like real beefy delts. Which I've tried to work on mine, but I can never get that because I'm just shaped like a coat hanger.
What?
The shoulder part. Yeah, just, you know, kind of a gentle downward slope. no angles other than just a downward slope into my arms.
Jesus.
Here's this was a big story. This is a massive movie story last week that we didn't get to talk about. I almost didn't have what it was. Oh, it's the wrong thing. Miles Teller as Goose's son in Top Gun 2. I don't think I have to say anything else. Opinions. Right now, because Kenjack, you had an opinion that you already put on Twitter, I know, but I don't think we talked with you about it, Trill. What's the Miles Teller as young Goose or Goose's son gonna do for you here?
I like it. You gotta have some connection to some more. I mean, they got Val Kilmer in there already. You gotta have connections to the original cast for it to truly be a Top Gun movie worth rebooting. So I get it. I don't have that big of a problem with Miles Teller after Whiplash because he was, you know, really good in that. Kenjack doesn't like Miles Teller all that much, but I think mostly that's from that GQ interview he did, which was out there and bizarre.
It'd be kind of funny if they were like, everyone got outraged. They're like, no, he's too young to be in Top Gun. And they just make like Tom Skerritt play Goose or something like that. They're like, all right, we're helping you out here. Or Michael Ironside.
Well, it's funny because Top Gun was released in 1986 and Miles Teller was born in 1987, right? So the math barely works out. So if it didn't work out that way, you'd have people like me screaming that it doesn't make any sense because he wasn't born in the time frame before Goose's death or conceived, because he could have been conceived and, you know.
Goss didn't seem like a guy that fucked a lot, or Goose didn't seem like a guy that fucked a lot. Like, he seemed like a jerk off guy. If that makes sense.
Well, you said Goss. You said you wanted
Goss. Because I wanted Goss on, yeah.
Yeah.
everything about that would have made sense, but it's just it, except for the fact that he's a good actor and probably wouldn't be in a Top Gun movie.
Okay. Yeah, I think he's. I think Ryan Gosling is in that very selective part of his career. He's gonna be very and he is really selective. He's not one to be in a ton of movies all at once. But I mean, he's the Goss God, so can't really blame him. First what's man, can't wait.
What's Anthony Edwards up to these days? Let's see. I don't know.
Well, you want him in this?
No, I mean he died in the first one, right? Because he played Goose.
Anthony Edwards. Oh. Let's see. What's the last thing he was in?
Oh, he was in Zodiac. I didn't know that.
I saw him in something not too long ago. I don't know.
I like Anthony Edwards.
He was in one episode of Frasier.
Dude, he was awesome on ER.
Niles, this is your worst idea yet. Except in Goose voice.
I liked him in Nerds, Revenge of the Nerds.
So that is Top Gun 2, which is actually not called Top Gun 2. It's called Top Gun Maverick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So more on that in the future, I'm sure. Last bit of news here. Oh, Trill.
What do you think the plot's going to be like? I mean, it's already been decided.
Yeah, it's going to be like they're making drones or something like that to replace all the fighter jets. And I already wrote this out when I blogged when they initially dropped the movie. I already guarantee you it's going to be they're going to try and replace these quote unquote unhackable drones to replace dogfighting like fighter pilots. And then someone's going to hack the drones and then all the fighter pilots are going to have to fight all the drones.
It's funny you say that because that's the plot to Stealth.
Yeah, exactly.
And Stealth, maybe one of the worst movies I can remember seeing from that decade.
That and do you remember the opening or one of the opening scenes in Green Lantern when remember Ryan Reynolds was a fighter pilot and they make him fight like three drones and he shoots them all down and they're like, oh, I guess dog fighters are still good and better than robots. And like he held off the whatever advancement. So I guess that's going to be it. I don't know. I'm not too excited for this still.
Oh, me neither. I'm not at all pumped for this movie. But
I'm kind of excited because really? Of Val Kilmer.
Okay, that's fair.
Val Kilmer's the real reason why I'm excited about this movie. Everything else, I don't know. I mean, Tom Cruise has been doing such good work with Mission Impossible that, you know, we'll see what happens. It could be pretty decent. I don't expect it to. I think its ceiling will be about a 70. I don't expect rating it higher than that.
Oh yeah, I mean super low expectations. So that's Top Gun Maverick. Miles Teller as Goose's son. Last bit of news, and then we're gonna move on to Sicario. Nick Cage. This is a pretty cool story actually, because this is the second animated superhero movie he's gonna be in this year. He's gonna be Superman in Teen Titans Go, the movie. And now he's also going to play Spider-Man Noir, one of the alternate Spider-Mans in the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie, which, if you don't know the concept of this, it's that there are tons of different Spider-Men. There are more than just one. There's Spider-Women, too. There's Spider-Gwen. There's a Spider-Pig. I forget what they call it, but there's a Spider-Man Pig. I'm not sure if it's going to be in the movie, but Spider-Man Noir is going to be played by Nick Cage. So Nick Cage is going to be in another Superman or superhero movie this summer. And I am very excited for that. I was already excited for this movie because visually it looks incredible. The only detractor it has is that we'll see how Sony handles a superhero movie that isn't really touched a lot by Marvel Studios. So I'm excited otherwise, though.
Spider-Pig just goes on Instagram and pays women for like pictures of their feet.
It's by the way,
Spider-Pay-Pig.
It's Spider Ham, by the way. That's his name.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy for Nick Cage, although I still think one of the great injustices is that he never got to be live action Superman. He named his kid Kal-El, for God's sake. Named his kid after Superman's Kryptonian birth name. I think he needs to get a go at playing Superman in a live action movie. Because he obviously has no problem being in these animated comic book movies. Let's bring him into something.
He's already been in the DC universe a lot, I feel like, now. Unless he's making that up.
It's just Ghost Rider, right? Comic books.
That is, that's the most cinematic name I've ever heard. Kal-El Coppola Cage. My God.
That's a good name.
Yeah,
it's like something made in like a Babelfish or something.
That's a crazy name. All right, continue. Sorry.
Imagine your name's Kal-El and you have unfettered access to that sweet winery, the Coppola Winery.
Oh, Coppola Winery. Never mind. All right, yeah. It would be pretty sweet, I think. But a Kal-El is a tough name to justify. I guess it's weirder. That, who's that lady who... There's that couple that named their kid like pilot instructor. You know what I'm talking about?
The name is actually pilot instructor?
Yeah. But it's not even spelled right. It's like pilot and the instructor is spelled with a K. It's the girl, like the female lead in A Knight's Tale. I don't remember her name offhand.
Wow, that's very fucking strange. What about the people who used to name their kid ESPN or ESPN? That's got to be the worst, right?
I've never even heard of that.
Really? Yeah, there's people who've named their kids ESPN. And it's spelled ESPN.
Wait, so I was wrong. It was Jason Lee named his kid Pilot Inspector with a K.
That's insanity. But hey, you know what? Whatever.
Penn Jillette's kid's name is Moxie Crime Fighter.
Hell yeah.
I had their Sega CD game, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. Sega CD is fascinating.
There's a mini game on it called Desert Bus. And all you do is drive a bus through the desert, but the stick's not calibrated to be straight, so you have to correct it the whole time.
Oh my god. You ever play X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter?
Oh yeah. I love that game.
Dude, I had the big ass joystick I used to hook into my compact and play that game. I loved it. Played it nonstop.
Well, you're a compact guy?
Yeah, it was like 1999 though.
You got that Presario going, that Pentium 3 Presario. Yeah.
I don't even think it was a Pentium 3. It's like a Pentium 1.0.
It's time to move on. Spent a lot of time on news.
Sorry, guys. I had to fly in a plane today, which I'm the only person who doesn't like that. So you'll have to excuse me. I'm a little irritated.
What airline was it so I can go after them for you?
No, I'm not. It was a good experience in general.
Yeah, you got a free movie.
Yeah, got actually two of them. I was able to get Love, Simon in there too.
Oh, right. That's right. Oh, I thought you watched the other flight. Oh, okay. Nice. All right. Well, so here's the thing. This episode's sponsored. This is a terrible segue. I had a whole segue planned.
Speaking
of good sleep, this was the script I wrote. Speaking of good sleep, we wanted to mention that this episode is brought to you by Lisa, which is very funny in its own right, but we'll get to that in a minute. Lisa produces a top. I already screwed this up. Lisa produces the top-of-the-line mattresses loved by hundreds of thousands of people with over 11,000 five-star reviews. Lisa Mattress was designed to provide support and pressure relief to every body type. On top of that, check this out. Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 sold. How about that? And one tree is planted per order received. Comfortable and socially conscious. That's the Lisa way. Get $160 off your order by heading to lisa.com/barstool. But why is it funny that Lisa's our first sponsor? Once again, by the way, $160 off your mattress by heading to lisa.com/barstool. Why is it funny that Lisa's our first sponsor?
Because of the Star Wars tie-in skit we did?
Because one of the first fake ads, maybe the first we did, first legitimate fake ad might have been the Jar Jar Binks one, which we're going to review Sicario on the other side of this break, but we're going to play that original ad. A little more advertising for Lisa. We'll be right back in Lights, Camera, Barstool.
Are you tired of tossing and turning on your traditional mattress? Are you ready for the best night of sleep you'll ever get? Are you ready for Star Wars The Last Jedi? The Last Jedi hits theaters this December, and we here at Lisa Mattress want to celebrate its release by introducing our new spokesperson,
Lisa Jar Jar Binks!
You know what, guys? I can't do this anymore. I quit. Are you tired of brushing your teeth with your traditional toothbrush? Do you wish there was a better way to clean your teeth like you get at the dentist? Well, Sonicare's got the solution, and this December when The Last Jedi hits theaters, we'll have a special promotion for you. Here to speak on this is our new spokesperson. Hi.
Lisa Jar Jar Binks! Lisa Jar
That doesn't
Jar-Jar
make any
Jar-Jar
sense.
Jar-Jar
that,
Lisa Jar Jar Binks!
And we're back. Lights, Camera, Barstool. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, Ken Jack, episode 61, I believe. Actually, I said like episode 70 last week. It's way off. It was definitely episode 60. Regardless, we're back on track here. It's the apology week, LCB apology week. Three episodes, making up for only one last week. We're reviewing Sicario, Day of the Soldado. No spoilers off the top. I gave the movie a 72. You can find mine and Ken Jack's written review on BarstoolSports.com. I gave it a 72. I thought it was okay. I thought it missed three things. And we'll get into this, obviously. Denis Villeneuve, Roger Deakins, Emily Blunt. All three of those things were missing from this movie. It was much different than the first one in that respect. Didn't have the same direction. I thought the characters were not set up quite as well. And it took away from what made the first one, I think, so mysterious, kind of freaky at times. It just took away some of the intrigue. It's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination, but still was let down. If you would have told me a year ago, Sicario's sequel, I'd have been like, okay, that's going to be a 90. It's going to be amazing. And then to not have all the same elements, it's tough. It's a 72. But I could see how some people, depending on what your taste in movies is, liking this one more than the other one, or as much. I gave it a 72. Trill, what did you give it?
I gave it a 70, so two less than you, Jeff. My thoughts were very similar to yours. I definitely liked it a lot less than the first one, but at the same time, I didn't hate it. It was enjoyable to watch. It just felt different. It didn't capture that same Sicario magic as the first one. I think most of that's due to the director change. Taylor Sheridan, again, I mean, he's made a lot of, or written, maybe even directed a lot of great recent movies. I think back to Wind River, which I think we did a ranking of our Taylor Sheridan. That was my number one. I know a lot of people had Sicario on their number one. I'd be interested to see what some of the more hardcore Sicario fans felt about this one, because it did feel different, you know?
Yeah, and I think there were some hardcore Sicario fans, and we're about to have one of them give his opinion, that who really were fairly let down by this. Kendrick, you still liked it, but I know you were let down.
Yeah, it was a super big letdown. I gave it a 76 out of 100. Definitely affected by the director change. It just didn't feel like a Taylor Sheridan script, in that every Taylor Sheridan script follows the same sort of like neo-Western formula, and this just didn't feel like a neo-Western. It felt like an action thriller, and like definitely more purely along that vein than an actual neo-Western, which is what he's known for. So that was my biggest letdown, I would say. And the fact that they did this huge narration shift. So like they set up the characters, obviously, in Sicario to be like, this is what they are. Like, this is like you grow to have like this certain impression of Benicio del Toro's character and Josh Brolin's character and the governments and the bodies and actors involved in the storyline. And then they kind of blew it all up in this one, which is frustrating, because that was one of the best things or best side plots of this entire movie. And that was just overall letdown. We'll get more into it in spoilers, at least. Most of my critique will have to be in spoilers.
Yeah, and I think this is a good argument. I mean, this movie is one of those good arguments against a sequel. You know, always say, like, a lot of movies get sequels, and I've said, like, well, sequels don't normally ruin the first one for me, and this by any means did not ruin the first one for me, but I don't think it needed a sequel, because it almost was like, well, we don't know where to go with this, so we're going to have a bunch of more violence.
Yeah, it didn't have an obvious direction for one. And I think that's probably why. Actually, I don't know the real reason why Denis Villeneuve, I guess I could have prepped and figured that out, why he wasn't involved. But I think if there was a direction, he would still be on board for it. And Emily Blunt wouldn't have drawn. Like, things changed, I think, because the fact that there may not have been an obvious direction that may have played into it. Listeners gave it a 71. So Troll gave it a 70. I gave it a 72. Kenjek a 76. Listeners gave it a 71, all within 5 points of each other for the most part. So very similar opinions. And we're going to stop right here for spoilers. If you don't want Sicario Day of the Soldado spoiled, stop right here.
To avoid spoilers for Sicario Day of the Soldado, skip to 47:47.
All right, we're back. Spoiler section. Sicario Day of the Soldado. I'll let you start it out, Ken Jack. Problems with this movie. Why did you not like this one as much as the first Sicario?
So my number one complaint with it, and this is, it's not really their fault, but I think the biggest issue is that they didn't have Emily Blunt and Daniel Kaluuya. And the whole big thing in Sicario 1 is that, like, they're the moral arbiters. So, like, they kind of take the place of you watching the battle between two forces which are inherently bad, the DOD and the cartels. Both of them are bad just in different ways. And they don't have that in this movie, and they sort of shift the, like, protagonist aura onto Josh Brolin and Del Toro. And, like, they're not good guys. They're bad guys. Like, they're not good people. And they make them into, like, the protagonist's feel, where it's like, oh, they're doing a good thing, when they're not. Like, the beginning of the movie, they kidnap a little girl. And by the end of the movie, you're like, oh, nice. Brolin let the girl go. Like, he also kidnapped her. He kidnapped her right in the beginning of this damn movie. that was my biggest frustration with it, is that lack of whatever moral arbiter for the movie or plot driver. Beyond that, I think the acting jobs were all fantastic for the most part. Isabella Moner was really, really good. What do you guys think of her?
Yeah, I mean, all around, I had no issues with the acting whatsoever. I thought the characters, as they were portrayed, were good. I thought she was good as well. But, you know, my big thing, and I think you touched on it a little bit, is it didn't have that same, I don't know how to phrase it, but like the first one felt desperate, and it kind of made you feel like queasy at times because of just the violent undertones. But the violence was like lingering there, whereas in here it just was like straight up, you know, violent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you didn't know where a lot of it was going to go. You know, like, yeah. I guess for this one, there was a bit of a debate, Kendrick, I know you had with some people about, like, you didn't call him the good guy, Josh Brolin's character, but like he essentially was, like you said, he was on more of the side of, the protagonist.
So he's the person you're rooting for throughout the movie. It's not necessary to say he's a good person. It's saying like he's clearly the protagonist for this, not the main actor, but the person you're rooting for.
Yeah, and it just kind of takes away, because the intrigue, the last one, is you really didn't know, besides Emily Blunt's character for the most part, like, you know, who was good, who was bad. And now you do know them. And there's not much to balance out when they're the only ones there. I will say Isabella Moner, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, she was great. If you don't know the name and you haven't seen this movie, if you for some reason watched Transformers last night with us, she was in that one. She was the character that was completely ripped off of Rey from Star Wars, even with the fake BB-8. So good actress who got away from a pretty rough movie. So good for her. She did a pretty great job in this one. But I think all the acting was great. Benicio is still fantastic in that role. I mean, the acting is great top to bottom, but it's very clearly missing something. I think that's the big detractor on it, is that when you make these sequels, true, like you said before, it's like we talk about these sequels being necessary. Are they needed? You know, even ones that aren't needed, they sometimes work, but this one so clearly was missing just like something. Like they're just, it's like, this is probably a stupid example, I guess, like it's like when your soda is flat, like it tastes like soda, but it's just like, you're missing that one thing that makes it great. Like that's really what this was. This was like, you're really thirsty, you're going to drink anything, flat soda. Like it's there, but it's definitely missing what makes it, you know, the Oscar nominee that the last one was. I think the interesting thing is that this also is like kind of like a knock on Taylor Sheridan to an extent too, for some people, because he's made so many great movies, but I think he had maybe his worst pairing out of all the ones he's made so far. Everything else he's done has been dynamite in terms of what's been nominated. I mean, the last one, the combination of him, Deakins, and Denis Villeneuve for the first Sicario, I mean, that's like Oscar heaven there. Like there are so many big time people, and so to strip some of that away for this, it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, it felt watered down. I think my favorite scene was probably, besides the shootout on the road, which was sort of confusing the way they led into it, but the opening 20 minutes were insane. They were so good. The terrorist attack in the beginning was like legitimately terrifying.
It was.
I think they did a really amazing job doing that. And then from there on, it just sort of like lost cohesion and kept bumping in and out. And like the storylines got kind of like garbled. And that's the one thing that was really good about Sicario too. And all credit to Denis Villeneuve on that. Like that was a very tough story to tell, and he made it very easy to follow. So I think that got lost.
Yeah. And especially after, you know, seeing Sicario first and then seeing Blade Runner 2049 and coming back to Sicario 2, which does not have Villeneuve or Deakins. Like you can really appreciate what they bring to the table a lot more. That was the big thing that was missing for me. So I mean, I don't have anything new to add. I mean, like I said, 70s pretty good. It's a good movie. It's an entertaining movie.
Yeah, for sure.
It just didn't live up to the first one, and that's a lofty standard too, because that one was great. But you know, you left it, and my whole thought was like, okay, like this is the perfect example for the argument of like making sequels, because I get why they make sequels, because they make money, but I don't think this is doing too well at the box office. I think it's at like 46 and the production was like 35 to 40, 45 based on Wikipedia. So, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. It's probably one of those movies that, you know, you have to be really good that first weekend and get good reviews to get people coming in the second weekend. I don't think it was there. They just didn't get the, get the money out of it.
I think one of the more annoying parts of this entire movie has to be the B plot with the kid, because the way they did it in the first one, I thought was smart, because it adds an element of humanity to everything, showing the relationship between the dad and the kid, even though the dad's a corrupt cop. But they don't dedicate a ton of time to that. It's just like sort of there to remind you. And in this, I feel like they gave that fucking kid like 25 minutes of airtime. Like, it was way too much.
Yeah, that's very true. It's just, again, I hate using the word disappointing 100 times, but it just felt like a bit of a letdown. And I didn't put too much into the thought of who was not going to be involved with this one. But then after I watched, I'm like, that was very evident. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, he's incredible. Last 3 years, he doesn't have a movie coming out this year. He did Sicario, Arrival, and then obviously last year, Blade Runner 2049. And then he's going to be tapped on to do the Dune reboot, apparently, which is going to be a massive deal whenever that comes out and comes to fruition. So him not being involved, obviously a big deal. Same with Roger Deakins, same with Emily Blunt. And I loved her role, too. She's a great actress to begin with. But lastly here, obviously the movie ends in two separate ways. It ends with Benicio del Toro's character taking in the boy we meet, or the young gentleman we meet, and the younger girl. I forget her name. What's her name in the movie? Isabel Moner's character?
Isabella.
Oh, right. Her character with Benicio del Toro's character, they're kind of together, correct? Or I have that backwards. No, that's Benicio del Toro's character and the boy's character together, and then it's Josh Brolin's character with her across the border.
Yeah, and like, okay. It was a year later or 3 years later or something when it went to Del Toro.
Yeah, so they're both still there, all four of them, kind of like the main players in the movie are there. You think they're going to go for a third? I mean, it sets it up for them to do it, but I hope it's just enough.
I don't think this made enough money for them to go for a third. What did the original? Let me look up the original Sicario.
I don't think the original made it done either.
Yeah, because it could.
$85 million, $30 million budget. $85 million, $30 million budget.
Yeah, I mean, that's an okay return, but again, it's not closed out the box office. But I think that it plummeted, according to an article. I'm just like reading straight off the news stories, but it dropped 61% this week.
Yeah,
so like huge fall off. And again, a lot of that comes back to these types of movies need to do well to get, in my mind, that word of mouth for second week. And if they don't, if someone says, you know, whatever, especially with all the options at the theater right now, it's just not going to get traction.
So if you could have a third one, and you could have Villeneuve back, you could have Deakins back, you could have a Sheridan script again, would you want a third one?
I would take a third one. Yeah, I mean, yeah, if that's the case. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, just to see the movie selfishly, I don't know like how it would perform. And, you know, a lot of this comes back to business, and if they think it's going to be a property that's going to, you know, get back closer to the original's, you know, $80 million mark, I don't know if they're too past that point yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not sure that makes sense for all of them to come back. I'd love if it did, but I'm not sure it's a realistic possibility. I want Taylor Sheridan to do another original thing. Not that this isn't original. It is original. Like another concept. Sicario, Hell or High Water, Wind River. I mean, just set them up, knock them down. Three dynamite movies. So I hope he moves on to something other than this. He did a TV show, Yellowstone, on Paramount with Kevin Costner. I didn't see that. And he was also in 12 Strong, the movie that came out earlier this year. Not a good movie. Well, I'll leave it up to you. You guys can decide on your own. But again, I'd like a new concept from him. So that's Sicario. Trill gave it a 70. I gave it a 72. Ken Jack a 76. Listeners a 71. Sicario Day of the Soldado. You can still rate it. You can find it on our Reddit and our reviews. You can rate the movie if you haven't seen it yet. And once you see it, you can put your 0 to 100 rating in on it. All right. So before we go into a couple listener questions here to round out this episode, Ken Jack, you said that we got another sponsor.
Yeah. So this is an independent ad. My cousin is running this little business out of his garage, and he asked me to help him out. It's outside of Barstool, so just don't tell our superiors at all.
Okay.
Yeah. So here, you're handing it to you right now.
All right. Let's see here. Do you play basketball? Want to learn the... Want to learn the basics on the fly? How about some great...
You're
fucking it up for him, man. He paid for the ad read.
He paid us
I'll start from the beginning. I'm sorry. I'll start from the beginning. Do you play basketball? Want to learn the basics on the fly? How about some great head? Great Head is the revolutionary new coaching system invented by New coaching system invented by pioneer basketball mind Buster Greathead. Coach Greathead watched over dozens of. It's gonna be really fucking hard. It's like 5-4 sentences. Okay, sorry. I apologize to your family friend. So this was invented by pioneer basketball mind Buster Greathead. Coach Greathead watched over dozens of NCAA tournament games during the mid-2000s and has won a lot of brackets with his other friends.
Dude, he paid us like 10 bitcoins for this. Well, he's supposed to.
Oh, my God. So Coach Greathead won a lot of brackets with his other friend group. So I assume the friend group that we don't know. For the monthly cost of $29.99, Coach Greathead will talk to you through the patented Greathead listening device. It's a cylinder. It's a cylinder shaped transmitter that you.
We got to power through this ad, man. Come on.
Jimmy's not going to like this.
No, he's going to be pissed. Cylinder-shaped transmitter that you slide inside so Buster can give you some real-time advice. Okay. Think it goes in your ear. Guess again. It's a suppository. The reason is that so his words of wisdom get transmitted straight through your spinal cord and into the brain. All you have to do is call Buster a few hours before your game on this landline, and as long as he isn't at a custody hearing, he will make you the best player you can be. Wow. Buster Greathead, Coach Greathead. Let's see, 10% extra charge if you put in promo code LIGHTS on their site, greathead.net. For every one subscription to Greathead, we donate $500 to the Jeffrey Skilling Legal Defense Fund. Greathead, it means a lot to me. Kenjack, I see here it's rated 5 stars on Amazon.
The stars are actually asterisks. Each one's for a different lawsuit filed by Greathead subscribers. So don't hold me to the actual 5 stars.
So it's a subscription service?
It's a subscription-based service, and that gets you access to the patented Greathead listening device cylinder, and then you also get access to the Greathead mind. But again, you have to call him way ahead of your game, because he just needs to know when to be there.
Yeah, so 10% extra charge if you put in promo code LIGHTS. $29.99 a month, Coach Greathead will talk to you through his listening device. It's a suppository. Does not go in your ear. So that's great. Wow. Thanks for securing that sponsor.
Yeah. The Bitcoins are transferring now. I'm looking at our bank account. Oh, never mind. They're gone.
Wow.
All right. Sorry. We'll move on.
Okay. Whew. All right. 2 sponsors, 1 episode. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? All right. Some listener questions. We've got a little longer than we thought we would. So we'll cut a couple of them. We got some good ones here. This is a food question. We'll move that to the back. Most patriotic movie of all time. That was a question for July 4th. Here we go. What's your favorite product placement ever in a movie? Favorite product placement you've ever seen? Which our Uncle Drew episode this week, I will mention a great product placement because Uncle Drew had some wild product placement. Favorite product placement, though? A lot of Transformers ones for me. Transformers, the first one, like the cube. I'm almost called the Tesseract. The cube. The what was it called? The cube?
The Allspark?
I think it was the Tesseract.
The Allspark.
Oh, Allspark. Yeah.
The Allspark. Yeah, because Tesseract is Marvel. Allspark. It turned a couple like Pepsi product vending machines into Transformers.
Like all fart.
That was like, that's peak like Michael Bay in your face product placement. Though also the one in Transformers where he just cracks open a Bud Light and just chugs the Bud Light on the street in the middle of the fight. That's pretty good as well. Transformers is great with product placement.
Not wrong. Mine is a Mini Cooper in the Italian Job, and that's because I legitimately love it and made me want to buy a Mini Cooper. That movie was awesome, by the way.
I think that my favorite one probably isn't real product placement, but spoofing it, but you still see the products in Wayne's World when they talk about selling out. And they're showing the products and saying how they never sell out, and then it finishes with Mike Myers holding a can of Pepsi and saying it's the choice of a new generation.
Mm-hmm. That's then, a great, great scene, always.
And then I think there's like a Nuprin spoof on it, which goes black and white, like the Nuprin commercials from the 90s. I don't know. It is a great scene. That's my favorite one, but I don't think it's real product placement. I think it's spoof of it. But who knows? Maybe Pepsi paid for that.
Sure. If it is, still genius. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. What is your favorite movie poster of all time? This is not amazing radio, but be descriptive. And then what's your least favorite movie poster of all time? Favorite and least favorite. Obviously, the movie poster with The Rock in Skyscraper, which has done wonders for the movie because it's continued to be talked about. Can he make that jump? We'll get into that when we review Skyscraper. Another segment coming up soon. Who knows? That's obviously a very popular poster, but favorite and least favorite. Ken Jack, I'll start with you.
My favorite's kind of hard. I almost like all the Spielberg and Lucas ones from the 80s and the 70s. So like all the beginning, the original trilogy Star Wars ones are all great. And I also love Raiders of the Lost Ark. And you know what? Maybe Last Crusade. I'll settle on that. Last Crusade's my favorite. Least favorite? That's a harder one. I don't really know. I'll sit on it. Trill, you go.
I'll give you mine.
Okay, no, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you a second to think on that, Ken Jack. My favorite of all time is a stupid answer, but I love this movie poster. It's The Bodyguard. You guys know what I'm talking about? When I say The Bodyguard poster, you're instantly picturing The Bodyguard poster where Kevin Costner is carrying a leather-clad Whitney Houston to safety. It's a good one. Yeah, that's a good poster.
Dude, that's the same font and the same font and design as Schindler's List. I don't know if you know this.
I did not know that.
Sorry, Timmy Foster.
I did not know that. Yeah, I don't know how to respond to that. My least favorite of all time, and honestly, I had to go Google worst movie posters, but I remember this one when it came out because it tells you absolutely nothing about the movie. It's from the Disney Million Dollar Arm movie with John Hamm. In the poster, I'm looking at it right now because I remember seeing this poster when it came out because I don't know what this movie is about. It gives you subtle hints in the movie, but mostly it's just a big poster of John Hamm looking into the distance, which works because he's a very handsome guy, but he's holding a cell phone or something like that with his coat draped over his shoulder, real suave looking, and then baseball is being played in the background. That's all you really know about the movie. And I think the Taj Mahal's in it, too.
I think you're right on that. I decided on my worst one. It's Chapter 27, just because that fat-looking, what's his name, Jared Leto, who ate a bunch. Like, I think his key to getting fat in that movie was he only ate melted ice cream with olive oil in it to get fat. He ate nothing but that 3 times a day for, like, 3 months to get fat. It makes me mad about it. And the poster is just Chapter 27. It's just him really fat-looking in the camera.
You sent the Anakin Skywalker one the other day to the group. The one where his shadow is cast as Darth Vader.
That one ruled. One.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't mention that. Your favorites.
A lot better than the movie was. Have you seen that thread on Reddit that talks about like movie poster design trends and how every movie poster is basically a contrast of blue and orange these days?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then like how every poster with Matt Damon is his face with words over it.
Yes, face.
Hell yeah. A good face. Also, I don't like the How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days movie poster because it's like one of those rom-com movie posters where they're standing back to back with each other, but it like doesn't even, I mean, it doesn't even look like they're in the same place when the picture was taken.
Oh, not and at all.
A lot of these posters, they Photoshop, so it's probably not the case, but it's like, I know you guys aren't really standing back to back like that. Come on. I'm smarter than that.
Yeah, they're like leaning too. They look like they're both leaning against a wall.
And McConaughey is wearing a from the pants, they're piped like a tuxedo, but it doesn't really look like a tuxedo. Maybe it is. Maybe it's got that shiny lapel, but he's wearing a black tie. It looks like he's going to a funeral.
Yeah, that's
it's a weird black tie.
I've seen that poster, but I guess I didn't realize how like it's not good. It's not great.
Like McConaughey's head in this poster, it looks disproportionate to his body. Don't you think?
It reminds me of the photo shoot for the Dark Universe. Like, it just looks, it's like real, but it's not. Like, it looks just off.
The other thing about it is I'm assuming he's putting a lot of weight on Kate Hudson's character in this poster, because one of his feet are like pointed, the bottom of his foot's pointed towards the camera, and it doesn't look like they're in a good shoulder position to support all that weight. So I'm feeling like they're lying to us here.
Huh. Look at that. How critical we just got of the How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Very analytical. I'll read mine quick and then we'll move on. Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal. Great movie. I love that poster. Love the poster. It's like an art poster. Mm-hmm. It's like painted, and you look up on his eyes. You can see LA in the reflection, I think. Love that one. The one for The Ides of March, where Ryan Gosling's holding up half a Time magazine and the other half of his face is George Clooney. Love that one too. Just two of them. That's all I got, really. Lots of cool movie posters, though. But as the years go on, they get less and less interesting. Movie posters these days just obviously are not as great as they used to be. I think, like Marvel, we obviously love Marvel movies. They have some fairly uninspiring posters. Like, they're all of the same exact formula. Popularized by Star Wars back in the day. The E.T. poster is great, too. The bike in front of the moon. That's a very iconic poster. Love that one. Let's see here. You know what I don't like? We talked about this. Was the Ready Player One poster, where the guy has the really long leg.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yep. The world's, his leg is longer than his body. Yeah. It's a whack poster.
Not a fan.
No, not at all. Here we go. I like this one. What fictional country or planet would win a World Cup? It's a tough question to answer, but I like what are some fictional countries and planets that you could see in like a galaxy World Cup? I feel like for Star Wars, it's hard to pick a country because the planet is like, planets in Star Wars are basically just countries because they're all like the same people, basically, like Naboo, Tatooine, at least from what you see, you know, Coruscant, people said Sokovia. Sokovia would be tough. I think the city,
they suck,
mostly got blown up. Wakanda, a lot of technology that might end up being cheating, but a lot of options here for a fictional country or planet that could win a World Cup. Any that come to mind? Fictional countries or planets?
Yeah. Asgard, what? I think easily.
Ooh, yeah, Asgard. Mm. That might be cheating as well, though.
How's that cheating? They're all superhumans. You get to pick a fictional place, right?
That's true.
They're all superhumans, and I think like three Scandinavian countries made it into the round of 16 in this World Cup. And they're just believers in these gods. And if they actually played on the court, on the field, they blow everyone away.
It's basically Asgard, yeah.
Give those players something to actually cry about, right? Classic soccer stinks joke. Because they fake injuries. Not like NBA or NFL. They never do that.
Never.
So what was the island that that Wonder Woman's from?
Amazonia. Ooh. Or something?
Yeah, Amazonia.
I don't know. I feel like they could win a Women's World Cup.
Yeah. They're also gods, too. I guess they could probably win both World Cups, too.
Yeah.
They would dominate.
I feel like they would be able to dominate.
They also did kind of get fucked up by like those World War I Germans, which is sort of stupid. Like, they're like gods, and they lost like 1,000 troops on that beach landing.
Yeah. They should have killed all of them immediately.
Yeah. That was stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think how many Star Wars. Like, Tatooine, they'd be terrible. Tatooine would be an awful country or planet.
Just fucking bug aliens from the band trying to like play soccer.
Now,
like,
now that'd be funny though. Like, their chants are just the Cantina band song. Like, I mean, that'd be a fun team to play instead of the Vuvuzelas. You just have the Cantina band song. World Cup, by the way, fantastic World Cup.
Just great World Cup.
I mean,
lots of drama on the pitch. lots of world class footy being played.
Would you rather a low-budget shot-for-shot remake of every movie ever made, so every movie from The Godfather to The Room to Star Wars to Skyfall, whatever, shot-for-shot remade, it replaces them, but it's low-budget, or all of those movies remade and replaced by just having Michael Bay make them? So that's
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
Yeah.
But he has... He has the creative license to change what he wants, though. It's not shot for shot.
Would that be more interesting than a low-budget version of all those movies? Have you ever watched those like fan films on YouTube, like Batman stuff? They're horrible. I mean, that's awful. Like, a low-budget remake of anything sounds awful. Like, and I know The Room, and we love that because of what it was, but I don't feel like you'd get that same lightning in a bottle. I feel like they'd be unwatchable. Whereas the Michael Bay ones would be awful, but they would at least be entertaining to see, you know, him replace Jaws with like an alien mecha Jaws.
Yeah, I think you both answer that the same way. That's very surprising. Okay.
Or maybe would you take the other option?
I mean, that was my initial answer. But you maybe convinced me. Because I was just thinking, like, if he has a creative license to do whatever he wants, I could see that being just absolutely ridiculous. Because it's Michael Bay, and he, for the most part, I mean, he typically doesn't give a shit what people think about what his work is.
Oh, dude, but could you imagine watching some low-budget remake of Lost in Translation or something like that, and they don't even have proper mics. It's just the camera mic, and the wind's just whipping into the camera mic. that sounds like agony to get through, whereas the Michael Bay ones would, like, I feel like you'd accept it at some point.
All right, change my mind, I guess. It's like that meme, change my mind.
A low budget remake of Lost in Translation, and they try to film it like Omaha and make it look like Tokyo. That's the kind of stuff you'd be getting. It's just not even entertaining.
That is very true. Yeah. All right.
Like, I think you're thinking Star Wars, where, yeah, I would like to watch a low budget Star Wars, and I'm sure I have on YouTube, but there's a lot of movies that, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. We just mentioned that. Imagine watching a low budget version of that one.
I mean, a low budget Blade Runner 2049, or Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh my God.
It would just be like RC cars, I guess.
It's just filmed at Burning Man.
It's Stuart Little cars. Stuart Little cars in Mad Max.
A low budget Stuart Little, where it's just a marionette of a mouse.
Dead mouse.
I'm Stuart Little.
It's like Dinner for Schmucks. Exactly. Yeah. It's the dead mice.
What about that? We talked a little bit about that Steve Carell trailer that came out, right? You remember that one? Like, he has like the action figures. Yeah. And he makes his own world and puts characters into him.
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty good, but it also did look like his character from Dinner for Schmucks, except instead of dead mice, it's like G.I. Joes.
Did we like Dinner for Schmucks? What's the consensus on that movie?
I liked it.
I liked Dinner for Schmucks.
Thought it was fun.
It was very charming. It was very charming, mostly because of Carell, but also the other characters.
Galifianakis was very funny.
Well, Galifianakis, but who is...
Jason Sudeikis was in it.
Yeah, who is the guy who was on? He was the cop in Bridesmaids. I forget his name. Yeah, the Irish guy.
Oh, Rory O'Dowd.
Yeah, he had a character in Dinner for Schmucks at the end dinner scene, right? Where he was the
the Zorro guy.
Yeah, I thought those characters were funny.
Yeah, they were really funny. Also, I think
Octavia Spencer's in it.
She was in it. Paul Rudd obviously was hilarious in it, and so was Jermaine Clement, was like his girlfriend's boss. He was very funny. That's like the artist guy. Like, all he does is like paint dicks and stuff. You know what I'm talking about? No. Yes.
Yeah. No. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I'm googling the Dinner for Schmucks lineup.
Oh, so the movie, by the way, the new movie is called Welcome to Marwen for the listeners.
Yeah, that looked pretty good. I like that trailer. Lucy Punch was funny in Dinner for Schmucks too. She was great in Bad, Bad Teacher.
Zemeckis joint, by the way, Troll.
Oh, the Zemeckis cube coming back.
Fucking Zemeckis cube.
That's what I associate Zemeckis with now. So thanks, Ready Player One.
It was the first thing I did when I saw the trailer, and it's like, from Robert Zemeckis. I'm like, oh, from the Zemeckis cube. From Ready Player One.
There were so many in your face Easter eggs in that movie. My God.
So annoying. Not from Forrest Gump. Zemeckis, no, from the cube,
which is just a Rubik's cube, because
yeah,
Back to the Future was because Back to the Future was made in the '80s, and Rubik's cubes were popular in the '80s. Bottom text.
Fuck, you're right. I didn't realize that.
All right, let's see. I think we got like two more here. Gotta wrap this one up. This is one that we haven't really talked about yet. We talked about, but we didn't talk about the poster, because the poster is an absolute work of art. It's the poster for The Last Jedi remake. It's a satirical poster, obviously. It's not actually made for the movie. It is a hilarious poster. I know you guys have both seen it. If you haven't seen it, I'll describe, but look up The Last Jedi remake poster. Luke has a vest on, and it's opened up to reveal a six-pack. He's still old. He's holding a lightsaber in one hand and a revolver in the other hand. Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher, is her same age, but she's in the slave Leia bikini. BB-8 has some sort of bat, like Negan from The Walking Dead with like the spikes wrapped around it. Ray, who doesn't look like Ray at all for some reason. I may be missing a joke there. She's looking over an oven where there's porgs that are cooked. John Boyega's character has a fedora and is a cyborg and is projecting some stuff with his left eye. Yoda is on some sort of like turret thing. I can't really tell what that is. The Millennium Falcon is chasing Boba Fett's ship, obviously, and it has like a...
That was my favorite one.
Yeah, machine gun turret. Yeah. There's a machine gun turret at the bottom of the Millennium Falcon, and chasing the Millennium Falcon is three Death Stars connected together. So it's not just one Death Star, it's three of them. Kylo Ren has like a 30-pack and is shredded shirtless and has like these spiked shoulder pads. And then Supreme Leader Snoke is looking over an overhead projector of my plan. Something like, yeah, my plan. Yeah. So it's a wild poster. Very funny though. This Star Wars Last Jedi remake it's making the rounds, and I actually think are they almost funded, or am I making that up? I don't know, but I hope they're funded. I hope it happens. I want this movie to happen very badly. Like, I will watch this movie the second it comes out. And actually, somebody asked us, would you be willing to pay to watch this? I would pay, like, I might pay to watch at home, like, $30. Like, that's how badly I want to watch this movie. Like, I'm not going to go sit there and, like, if my only option was to pay it, like, to pay for it, not eventually see it for free, I would pay $30. I'd pay double, because I think this has potential to be one of the most absurdly terrible things of all time.
You're right. I think I agree with you. I think I'd pay that money to go see this, like you're saying, from the comfort of my own home. Yeah, why not? Like, the poster is something else, though. How about that, folks?
Even if you didn't like the movie, like, you still have to admit that this is probably going to be terrible. Wait, had they? I don't know if that's real. It says they've already had $404 million pledged. I think they're funded.
Seriously?
I swear to God, their website says $404 million pledged.
It sounds like the movie version of the Fyre Festival.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Take some of that money and just be like, oh, we ran into production troubles when we couldn't get any of the IP licenses. Like Disney, the company that's known for suing daycares for having Mickey Mouse murals. Be like, okay, I'm cool with you guys taking all these characters and adding an 8-pack to Kylo Ren.
Is Kylo Ren supposed to look like Super Shredder, by the way?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's what he looks like. He looks like Super Shredder.
The only acceptable version of Kylo Ren for this remake is one where he's twice as wide.
Yes.
That's true.
Dude, I rewatched Last Jedi the other night, and just that scene, I can't look at it seriously ever again. It was so funny.
That meme came out so quickly, too, and it was so out of nowhere.
Well, because that scene was out of nowhere. There's no reason for him to be shirtless. It added nothing to the movie.
It was a humor bit, remember? Because like she was like, can you put on a towel or something?
Yeah.
Is that the third? Or is that only, it's the second or third? Because Anakin's shirtless briefly in Revenge of the Sith. Is there a shirtless in the originals? Or am I drawing a blank? I don't think there is.
I mean, Luke had that robe that was kind of open chest at points when the wind was ripping in the right direction.
He doesn't have a shirt off when he's in that diaper floating in the tank. So, yeah, if you haven't seen the Last Jedi remake. Yeah. If you haven't seen the Last Jedi remake poster, you got to see it. It's no matter what you think about Last Jedi, it's a hilarious poster. I laughed very hard when I first saw it. I know we all did. Okay, last question here. Who would win in a fight? Homeward Bound, the dog from Homeward Bound, or Air Bud?
The Golden Retriever from Homeward Bound?
Yeah. The Golden Retriever from Homeward Bound.
Buddy?
Is it Buddy?
Chance is the big... The older dog was a Golden Retriever. Chance was like a pit bull.
That Golden Retriever was pretty old and Homeward Bound. Pretty old and wise. Old. So I imagine Air Bud could take him because he's a professional athlete.
Golden Retriever from Homeward Bound. Yeah, I mean... That was my thinking as well. Obviously, the dog is older, but the dog, pretty gritty. He made it home, right? I mean, he's...
Yeah, but that doesn't translate into going toe-to-toe with Air Bud. Air Bud's an athlete.
So was Dak Prescott. A bunch of teenagers beat him up. Didn't think about that, did you? So I think this old man can beat him up.
That was not the first thing that came to mind in this hypothetical. No.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's anyone's game, I would say. I don't know who I would bet on.
Look, we're not advocating dog fighting here. Just, you know, and like in a Alien versus Predator style situation, who's the superior dog? Is it Homeward Bound? The dog from Homeward Bound, Chance is not the one from Homeward Bound.
No, Chance is, but he's like the pit bull one.
Yeah, he's a pit bull.
He's the younger puppy-ish dog. And then Sassy is the cat, I believe. But I don't remember the golden retriever's name. Also,
Shadow. Yeah, it's a cool ass.
It's kind of funny to think about.
I'm still winning on Shadow. His odds just skyrocketed.
Like Homeward Bound, right? Came out what, 1991, something like that. Just straight up
93, yeah.
Taking movie clips of dogs and then adding a voiceover with no attempt to make their mouse move. And you got something like The Jungle Book, which is CGI, obviously, but it's amazing how far we've come. Technology.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's incredible.
Voiceover thing is what's going to be in the Last Jedi remake, basically. It's going to be like fucking Plato just moving and they're like voicing it over and like, oh, yeah, that's Dexter Jester.
You know what I want? This Last Jedi remake should just be flash animation, like Newgrounds quality.
Yes. Dude, I'd love that. That'd be great. I think I'm definitely going Shadow, by the way. But are either of them neutered? Either of those dogs?
I don't think the Homeward Bound lore went into that. I would have to imagine yes.
So it's canon that Air Bud is neutered and the jury's still out on Shadow. So I'm taking whichever dog has the chutzpah. That means balls.
No, I got it. I just that was just a preposterous thing to ask. So I'm mentally trying to parse through this question.
Look,
Homeward
Bound.
You need balls for that type of fight. All right, that's all I'm saying.
I don't know, man. I'd rather just see those dogs like cuddle and play.
That's true.
Be peaceful.
You ever watch Cats vs. Dogs? That was a CGI mess of a movie that I've watched 1,000 times.
Cats vs. Dogs? Wait a second. That's like one of the worst movies of all time, right?
That'd be a good commentary track movie.
I love that movie. No, it's genuinely entertaining. It's just bad. So like, I don't think that would be good. Or actually, maybe it would. Maybe I just talked myself right out of that.
Wait, Cats and Dogs?
Cats and Dogs. Yeah.
Okay, so the sequel is considered like the worst movie of all time, I think.
What?
I think the sequel is considered like one of the worst movies of all time.
The Revenge of Kitty Galore. Oh, God.
Yeah, Revenge of Kitty Galore is considered one of the worst movies of all time.
That's such a nod to adult humor, but it's like, oh, we can't go there.
Can't say pussy. Can't say pussy.
You know, some guy at the studio is like, we got to say the P word in this movie. The joke won't work. He's like, no, this is a kid's movie. It's got to be Kitty Galore.
What a wild cast in this movie, too. James Marsden, Nick Nolte, Christina Applegate, Cat Williams, Bette Midler, Neil Patrick Harris, Sean Hayes, Wallace Shawn, Roger Moore, Joe Pantoliano, Michael Clark Duncan, Phil Lamar, like J.K. Rest Simmons. J.K. Simmons is like 20th build in this.
It's a crazy cast, yeah. Cats
Murderous row of voice talent for Cats and Dogs. I don't know how this movie didn't pan out.
All right. So that's episode one of our Apology Tour episode, week one. Apology Tour, week one. Day one, week one.
We got a lot of great content coming this week, folks. We haven't really figured it out yet. No, I'm just kidding. We have. We're going to do some more reviews, talk some more movies.
Yeah. Some more reviews.
Have a good week at the box office.
Yeah. There's been some good stuff out. So, yeah, our next episode, we're going to review Tag and Uncle Drew, and then we're going to talk about commercials. And we have some listener questions as well we'll get to, just to kind of give you a little extra stuff.
I got a housekeeping question to ask. Has anyone who has won one of our three contests reached out?
Yes, but...
Okay.
So, yes. Long story short, we're obviously still switching over with the Barstool store, and we're going to have merch. So whenever that happens, the timing was just unfortunate there. So whenever that happens, we'll send out our Barstool merchandise, but we don't have anything up there yet. We will soon. People have asked. But yes, someone has reached out. There's one contest we have not heard from the winner. I think that was the Infinity War Death Pool, which was coolest one.
I don't know. I like the movie draft. I think that we do another movie draft for the holiday season, and we actually like wait. We properly like get odds adjusted on the movies
for
yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. We also have the box office one too, but we have to wait for the Avengers. We have to wait for that to finish. That's the Avengers is still in theaters, so gotta wait on that. Anything else, guys, before we wrap this up? Sorry again for having one episode last week.
Captain Marvel finished filming. See that?
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
Cannot wait. I saw Ant-Man again. Loved it. I loved it. Still number 11 in my Marvel rankings.
Ant-Man 2.
It's not doing great, right? It's doing good at the box office, but it's not doing great at the box office, right?
It's not doing amazing, but they're saying it's doing okay.
Better than Solo.
Yes.
Okay.
Not totally shocked by that.
That's our bar. That's our bar for this summer after Infinity War.
What if it didn't do better than Solo and they just canceled the rest of the MCU? They're like, that's the bar now.
Or what if they, what if Ant-Man was to play a pivotal role in the next Avengers movie and they decided that the interest for Ant-Man wasn't there anymore?
He already does. Yeah. He does play a big role in Avengers.
That was the joke.
No, dude, you don't get it. Did you see any of the stills from the pictures from set? He's there.
No, I don't do spoilers. I've never once asked for a spoiler ever. Like the night Jeff went to go see The Last Jedi and I was hitting him up. Like, dude, what happened?
I literally sent Trill the entire Last Jedi the next morning on my flight. It wasn't coming out for another week.
Are you sure you want to do this to yourself? I'm like, I gotta know, Jeff.
That's so funny.
You did it for Avengers too. You asked it after Infinity War.
I'm not a spoilers don't ruin it for me.
They say not really, a big... you've always said it makes it better for you.
Yeah, because I can't wait to see what happens. I go in knowing stuff's going to happen. I'm excited. I'm like an execution guy. I like to see it unfold. So regardless of whether or not, now there are some plot twists. I think that I'm glad, and that might be a good segment. It's like best plot twists ever or something like that. But I'm glad for some plot twists. I didn't know. I've seen some of them coming, but like for like Last Jedi, I don't know. It doesn't make or break the movie for me.
All right, it's fair. We've always respected that, and have always spoiled things whenever you've asked. So,
precious baby boy, the podcast.
That's it. For Ken, Jack, Trill Ballins, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Tuesday. Same old.